the Spoiler Log and a link to the past Randomizer podcast. I'm your host, Dante. With all the episodes I've been editing lately between GMP and Spoiler Log, they're all starting to blend together. So I know we are on the GMP side in finals for the Mentor Cross Keys tournament or the Cross Keys Mentor tournament. One of those two is right. But that should be wrapping up soon. Looking forward to that, crowning a Mentor tournament champion. And the No Logic Mentor tournament is still well underway. You know, I don't think there's anything crazy that's happened in the Link to the Past Rando community this week. So no news, right? Right. Yeah, I guess I'll just save all that for go mode. Anyway, today's episode, we've got Muffins. Muffins is a really great guy. I've enjoyed every bit of time I've been able to spend in voice chatting with him. And I hear he's a pleasure in person as well. But I hope you guys enjoy today's episode with Muffins. On today's episode of the Spoiler Log, we have the one and only Muffins. How you doing, Muffins?
I'm not bad, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm glad you came on, and also I have to publicly thank you for rescheduling. We tried to schedule a week ago from where we're actually recording, and then I had like an absolute disaster at work. So Muffins was kind enough to reschedule on pretty short notice. So thank you for that.
Not a problem. It happens all the time.
Oh, man. So, you know, I'll say the first time I ever saw your name kind of pop up was around Structural Mike. Like, I just assumed you and Mike were friends. And I don't know if that's actually the case, like outside of Rando or just inside of Rando. But that's like where I found you from or learned of you. And then the Muffins Tracker, as I like to call it. So yeah. That's kind of like the claim to fame, at least in my brain. Is that true? Is any of that true, or am I just making all this up?
No, I have spent more of my recent Rando time around Mike and the guys that hang around his channel and Discord and stuff.
Okay.
Prior to that, I got into Rando actually because I came across Andy's stream at some point, as I know many, many people have had the same story. So, you know, I looked around there in the chat for a while. I am not very active in chat, especially, you know, Andy's one of the biggest streamers. So
sure,
I would hang around every now and again. That's how I learned of it. And then I stopped playing for a while. And then when I came back, Mike is probably one of the closest people I know in Rando, just that I played the most with and chatted sure. the most with. I don't honestly remember how I came to know him. Now I think back on it. But indeed, like, that's where I spend most of my time these days.
Okay, well, I'm glad my assumption wasn't wrong. Like, sometimes I just assume people look like their profile picture, and when it's not an actual person in the profile picture, I'm very wrong. So I'm not perfect when I make assumptions quite often, but let's go back, way back. How big was gaming for you growing up? Was that a part of your life?
Yeah. So I have gamed pretty much my entire life. Mainly a PC gamer, actually. Although okay. I did have a Super Nintendo when I was growing up, and I did have The Legend of Zelda sitting into the past sitting on it. I remember we had had the manual and reading through it to work out what the items did, because God knows how young I was, but I needed the manual. I definitely completed it when I was younger a couple of times, and then that, you know, we weren't really a big console family.
Sure.
My brother was a lot more techie, and we had computers, and so I had a PC from when I was 8 or something. And yeah, gaming's been a massive part of everything I've done. That's been my primary hobby for the last, 25 years, I guess, then.
Okay. So PC gaming way back when was much different than it is now. So what kind of games were you playing, you know, at 8 years old?
I played a bit more real-time strategy. There was a few. My brother had a couple of friends as well that played. We did a couple of like LAN parties where they would come over. We played a game, Total Annihilation. It's this real-time strategy type thing. Played that a lot. And then at some point I moved on to Diablo 2.
Okay.
And I spent uncountable hours in Diablo 2. And then at some point, very early on, I moved on to playing WoW, which was just around the time that like Blackwing Lair came out. So pre-expansions, very early on. Mm. And then that took over for most of my teens and later teens. Beyond that, a lot of, you know, things like Half-Life, BioShock, Mass Effect, these kind of game, bigger games from a while back, I would say.
Yeah.
And, but then I guess as the years went on, I moved more towards, instead of playing lots of different games, I would heavily focus on one or two games. So that kind of happened a bit with Diablo and WoW. But then Minecraft is something that has been, again and again, comes up, a lot of modded Minecraft. Binding of Isaac, I have several thousand hours in. Wow. Team Fortress 2 as well.
So I
fall into that one game and play lots of it, and that is exactly what happened to Rando when I picked that up as well.
That seems to be the case for a lot of us. I like to think there's the people who just jump headfirst into any type of game, like yourself. And Rando's made up a lot of those. The Rando community is made up of a lot of those in my mind. The problem is that the pool is so deep, we just don't know how to ever get out of it. And yep. we're here and, you know, we're stuck here for better or for worse.
And as soon as you think you're swimming, someone comes out with a new mode or something crazy, Avian Art or Doors or something.
Exactly. And just like
straight back in.
It's like you get out of the deep end, you're in the shallow end, you can stand up and suddenly the bottom falls out and you don't know what to do anymore. It's like, I got to try this. So,
yeah, exactly.
So are you, I don't know like the proper way to put this, but like in WoW, were you like one of the dedicated people? Like, did you just play it for, you know, like leveling your character up, or were you like hardcore into like getting into the guilds and, you know, doing the raids and the other, like, I guess like boss missions and stuff that they have in MMOs? Yeah.
So I was heavily into raiding, actually. The guilds okay. I was in was pushing for like server first for some of the boss kills. I remember we were the first guild to kill C'Thun in Anchorage when that came out. We were grinding the bosses in Blackwing Lair when that came out. So much so that this sounds stupid, but yeah, I was younger, so I was in the equivalent of high school for you guys. And I would, because I'm from the UK, and a lot of we were playing on the American servers at the time, because this was back before the European servers were established.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I would come home from school. I would go to sleep. I would wake up at like 10 p.m., 11 p.m. I would raid until 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. I would go to sleep for a couple of hours. I would get up to go to school.
Wow.
Rinse, repeat. That happened for quite a while.
That is total dedication.
Which, you know, I'm not too sure whether that's the healthiest thing to be doing at that age. It worked out. Luckily, I was reasonably good academically, so it worked out fine.
Sure.
But no, so when it was WoW, that was exactly what I was doing. Not so much since then.
I guess that age is probably the ideal time to do it. If it's not like, you know, university or college years, it would be then. Because, you know, I'm thinking here in my 30s, if you told me I had to like come home middle of the day or middle of the afternoon, go to sleep, and then get up to stay up in the middle of the night, I think I would probably lose my mind.
Yeah.
Like, there's very few and far between. If it's not family or emergency, I don't think I'm going to be doing that.
No, anymore. I am totally with you. Beyond the occasional like crazy multi we do at some point these days, I can't push them late nights anymore.
So I guess what allowed you to kind of say, I've had enough WoW, or, you know, the hardcore style, I guess, play style of it?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thinking back on it, I think at some point I was moving from our high school to the just before university, so college, I guess, and I had to pay a bit more attention and do a mm-hmm. bit more work than just glide through things. And at some point it was, I think the guild started to like stop raiding as much, and it just seemed like a good time. I actually ended up selling my WoW account on eBay at the time.
Holy crap.
Yeah, this kind of ages it for you, right? The fact that you could do that. And I remember I put the listing up and it got taken down straight away. So then you change World of Warcraft to WoW and this kind of stuff. Very early evasion for wow. selling these kinds of stuff.
That's crazy.
But yeah, I sold my account, right? So at that point, it was very much done for me for playing for a while. And I have gone back to WoW a couple of times, but never to the same degree. More just to see some of the new content and things like that, but not for many years now.
It seems like that'd be super hard to get back into, like from square one. It's like, all right, no characters, just level one and whatever I know about the game in its current state.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I've jumped on a few MMOs since then. Final Fantasy 14, I've picked up a couple of times. I am yet to finish the main story, but I've been close twice. Yeah, so it's exactly that, though. It's a bit hard to jump back in. And I don't know, like I said, that style of grinding raids is just a bit past where I am now, I guess, or not the kind of thing I want to spend on my time when I have other things that I'm interested in these days.
Oh yeah, for sure. So you said you had many or multiple thousands of hours in Isaac. So I have an IRL friend that's very into Isaac. Like every time it comes out on a new system or a new iteration with more achievements in Steam, he's like, I'm going to do it on the Switch. I'm going to do it on Steam. And he always tells me, this is my rando. So is that a good, broad overview of the game? I know it's like procedurally generated or something, and I'm probably like butchering that in a description, but would you say that's a pretty decent comparison?
Yeah, no, I think so. It's really got some of the same feel about it. I would guess it's a bit more linear than Rando is. Rando's very open world. Isaac is level based. But it is. It's every time it's a new game. It's a new set of items in a new order. New synergies, things you don't really think of before. And but again, same old bosses, same old enemies. You know, the same strategies and stuff. I definitely have that feel with it. I, again, put it down a little while back. I recently sure. got a Steam Deck, so it's back on there, taking up time when I hit the bed. But it's definitely got that feel to it, yeah. I like that, you know, the replayability comes from each time you play. It's slightly different than the last, and there's the bit of the puzzle as to where am I going? Where am I finding consumables? Where is the secrets in this? How am I going to work with the items I've been given?
Yeah. And like, I played a little bit of Isaac, like way, way back, like one of the first releases of it. And I just remember like not being able to put it down. And, you know, when I got my Steam Deck, I kind of thought the same thing. And I was like, just don't install it. And my friend's telling me, dude, just install it. You'll have a great time. And I'm like, no, I don't need to be playing Isaac. Like you were talking about, I don't need to be doing it in bed. My wife will just punch me if I do that. It's bad enough if I turn the TV on and put on a Twitch stream to fall asleep to.
So, yeah.
But yeah, it could be like super, I guess games like that are just kind of addicting. Maybe that's why ALTTPR is so popular with us, is just because there's so, it feels different every time, but there's enough like similarities and viable strategies that can be practiced that help you. So you feel like you're like actually working towards something, I think.
I totally agree. Again, exactly the same thing I like about Rando. No matter how many seeds I've played now, it always feels different. And it doesn't matter if you're playing open or cross keys or a glitched mode or something. Every time you play, it feels different. And it's the puzzle. I enjoy the puzzle,
yeah.
Which is, I do a lot of cross keys and glitched because they're much, much more puzzly, or at least I feel like they are, than your standard open modes. And for that exact reason.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think it resonates with like a lot of people in the community. So after you kind of go through Isaac, which you're still kind of doing, and then, you know, after World of Warcraft. So where do you kind of land gaming wise? Is this kind of the Mass Effect, like BioShock, Half-Life era type deal?
Yeah. And then I went, that was probably university years. I had a bit more of a powerful PC. I could play a lot more of the AAA games that were available, or some slightly older ones. Far Cry, Mass Effect, Half-Life, mm-hmm. these kinds of things. Half-Life 2 actually was still when I was in like high school. I remember because the day it came out, I convinced my mum to give me the day off school, the sick day, and I played through the whole game in the day.
That's phenomenal.
After that, it was indeed that kind of games. I went through a lot of different games at that point. I think I had a brief stint back in WoW as well, back to Diablo 2 for a little while as well, mm-hmm. Hitting up some of the games that were a bit more nostalgic. I'd moved away from home and stuff, so that was the kind of stuff I was playing then.
Makes everything feel a little bit like home, I think, even if you move away and you go back to an old game like that sometimes.
No, totally. And stupid things like when I was younger, I would do like dailies in WoW, listening to a particular playlist, and then just going back and doing them dailies, you know, brings up their memories of that music and the place that you were at the time. So,
oh yeah.
You know, so I went back to a lot of, yeah, older games really that I had enjoyed when I was younger, or that I never really, you know, you play a game when you're younger, you don't fully appreciate it. And then you go back and play it and you see it for what it is.
Right.
Playing games like System Shock 2 was a game I played with my brother when I was younger. That was a lot of fun, and went back and played that through myself.
Is that a PC game as well? Or I've actually not heard of that one. So
System Shock 2. Yeah. It's an older game. It's very like cyberpunk in space. You're on a space station. There's this AI that's taken over the space station.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got a lot of interesting mechanics in it. It's very story driven, and was something that, like I said, I think my brother and I had played together when I was younger, and was one of them ones that I wanted to go back through and play through. Yeah, and then I'm trying to think what else. A lot of Team Fortress 2 around that time as well was something I played uncountable hours of. And Counter-Strike as well, actually. Yeah, Counter-Strike Source when that came out. So
I didn't ever get into TF2, but when I got into Overwatch, all my friends were telling me, you know, you would have loved TF2 if you like this, because they're like, it's basically, you know, without a bunch of extra crap, it's basically like the OG Overwatch, because it's like you have the roles and whatever as far as like the combat.
Yeah, and Overwatch came a little bit after this time. that was something else I got into as well. And it's true. They have a very similar feel about them in certain regards. TF2's got a little bit more of a goofy feel about it compared to the seriousness that can come with Overwatch. But
sure.
Yeah.
So when I guess when you're playing stuff like TF2 and Overwatch, obviously, and Counter-Strike, they're very highly competitive games, I guess is the way to put this. You know, competitive is like the way you would queue up if you're trying to be serious, I guess is one way to put it. At least that's how a lot of my friends viewed it. Were you more of the let's jump into casual and, you know, just have some friendly rounds, or were you hard on the competitive grind for those?
Mostly casual. TF2 was always casual. Counter-Strike, I did a few scrims with some IRL friends, and then with some online friends as well a bit later. Overwatch, however, pushed me more towards the competitive side. There was just, I'm not too sure what it was about it. It was, yeah, really well. It worked really well with just being able to queue up in the competitive queues and stuff. It took me a while to jump into my first like competitive matches. It seemed daunting at the time. Now I look back, I'm like, what was I thinking?
Yeah, I totally get that too. Because like, you know, I remember a friend of mine, we would try to, like four or five of us would try to queue up. And then of course we're going to get like one random person. In competitive way back. And then it's like, okay, well, one of our people thinks they can be DPS. Like everybody thinks they can be DPS. And then he was like absolute, like he wasn't trash, but we thought he was at the time. And then we were like, bro, we can't play together. And it was like, looking back, you know, he took it well. He was like, whatever, you know, I'm not going to be upset. We could just play casually together. But like, I don't know why we took it. Me and some friends took it serious. We were just stuck in like silver, gold, platinum territory. Like, it's not like we're becoming, I forgot whatever the top, whatever is called anymore in Overwatch.
Yeah. Like Grandmaster or something.
Yeah. But it was, it's crazy because that game, I felt like Overwatch brought out like the competitive toxicity from me as well. Like I saw happen to a lot of people, but like I play competitive, like Rocket League, never got like super toxic, which I hear that's like one of the most toxic communities as far as like the online only seed. So anyway,
good to know.
These super competitive games, like it's just, it's wild how serious or how casual you want to take them. And I think that's kind of cool because like, it's better to take it casually, I think. And, you know, I'm glad you did that with some of these.
Yeah. And even like, I enjoyed the competitive side. I think one of the things that I liked about competitive Overwatch is people are trying to win. Like, I never felt with Counter-Strike, every now and again, you'd have some random guy that's on the team who's just messing around. But in Overwatch, it happened all the time in quick play. Whereas at least in competitive, it felt like people were trying to win. They were actually putting in effort. And that was what I liked about it. Less about the like hyper competitive, I'm going to be GM at some point. No, I like that kind of playing together as a team, which is a bit ironic because it's not like I was on voice all of the time, that kind of stuff. Even now, you know, I chat on voice in multis and stuff, but not very often. But it was just that focus of actually trying to win rather than mess around that I enjoyed.
Yeah, and it's always good to feel like you click together as a team. I think that's like one reason why Cooperando feels as nice as it does, just because like you're hanging out with somebody and you're also, or somebody's, I guess is a way to put it for Overwatch, since it's like teams of five and or was six. And then, you know, it's like you have one common goal and you're all working together towards it, which makes it feel like a terrible work team building exercise. So in all this, I mean, you're around PCs your entire life. When do you start getting into coding? Like, and I bring this up because, you know, I go look over at the Tark server and I see that there's some bot overlords and you're one of them. You know, and we mentioned the muffins tracker early on, which we'll get to. So when do you start picking up coding and when does that become a part of your life?
Yeah. So, ironically, this comes back to gaming again. Again, me and my brother, we played a very, very old MMO called Neocron. Very cyberpunk, very, very small community. I'd be surprised if anyone's actually ever heard of it. So shockingly, the servers are still maintained by some volunteers, and it's a game I've gone back to once or twice for a few months at a time. But I don't remember how, but we worked out that some of the game files were like built in Lua and you could go in and you could modify them. And the game was not the most secure. So you could end up spawning yourself items and stuff that you shouldn't be able to have and give yourself GM only items and this kind of stuff. I guess that was probably one of my first experiences with it. And another game called Uplink. And it's a game about hacking and you have a command line and, you know, it's not a true command line like you'd normally have, but it had commands in it that you had to build up and stuff. So that's probably my earliest like exposure to it. Mm-hmm. I didn't really do much with that though, other than mess around a little bit. And I installed Linux on my PC at some point and was messing around in there. So I have a bachelor's in forensic biology. And when I was going to university, I was kind of deciding between that and going into science or going into programming. And I kind of reasoned that I can learn programming on my own in my own time. I can't learn and do science in my own time. So I went for biology. A very good friend of mine was at a university also doing forensics. So that pushed me towards the forensic biology course. And, there was no programming in that at all, actually. And then not long after that, well, at the end of my bachelor's, me and my now wife moved to Belgium. And the course that I took a master's course here, and that was like my really first active exposure to it, because we had a bioinformatics, so it's like coding for biology and data analysis course there. And that was, I guess, now 10 years ago, 12 years ago.
Okay.
That was probably my biggest jump into it. We had that course and I don't know, something just clicked. And from then on, I've delved into it more and more. That's now my job. I am a bioinformatician for a bunch of labs in one of the departments at the university. And that's where I jumped into it a lot more. So no, you know, formal training, let's say, but stuff like
that.
Exactly.
The self-taught stuff's like, to me, is like the super cool part about, you know, when you can make a career out of that. You know, a lot of the stuff I do with computers, you know, has been self-taught. Now I can't program. I do not have the patience or the mental fortitude for it. But, you know, with stuff that I learned growing up, like when I got to college initially, a lot of it was easy. So to me, like the beginner stuff, because it's like, I've already done this. But, you know, I resonate a lot with the self-taught thing. And I'm kind of envious, to be honest, that you could self-taught, like be self-taught in programming. That's like super incredible in my eyes.
Thanks. I don't know. Like I said, there's something, it's very logical, which works well with my brain. And I have a very, the way my brain works is I love to work out how something's working and be able to tweak around with it and stuff. Being around computers and software, this made a lot of sense to, you know, start to understand this kind of stuff, this kind of stuff a lot more. And, I love to tinker with stuff. And so being able to automate stuff and program for this kind of thing is I think a lot of the reason that moving towards being self-taught worked well for me.
Yeah. If you're driven, and it sounds like you are in this case. So are you using, I guess, like, are you currently using your degree at all, or is it just completely all the self-taught programming?
No, so my degree is forensic biology. And I'm in a biology department. I have my master's was, which I technically didn't graduate the master's. I switched to a PhD program at some point. But that was also biomedical sciences, so that's biology. And my my PhD was also biology and computational biology. And that's what I do now. So I moved from the PhD to the position I'm in now, and have been for the last 5 years, I guess.
Okay.
Which is computational biology or bioinformatics, which is data analysis for biological data, genome sequencing, this kind of stuff.
The really smart stuff. Like, my experience with genome sequencing and stuff is like whatever Metal Gear Solid told me in the story, which I don't believe is any of it's true. So that, you know, I'm not as smart as muffins here. that's pretty awesome.
I'm sure there's a lot of ways you're smarter than I am. Don't worry.
Oh, well, thank you. So I guess let me ask this, like, when did you become like aware, like speedrunning, Twitch, rando? Do you remember any of that? Like, which one came first?
I don't, now you say it. So speedrunning has never been, I've always been aware of speedruns being around games. You know, you hear of speedruns, and watching people break the shit out of games and stuff has always been great to watch videos of and see them blitz through stuff when you're like, how do you do this? But it's never been something I've actively pursued because, I don't know. Not my kind of personality, I think, to throw. I say this having put thousands of hours into games, but like to get that hyper efficient routing and stuff like this. So speedrunning isn't it. I think actually Twitch probably was first, is my guess. And not long after that, you know, finding out that people happen to stream these old games that I used to enjoy, like A Link to the Past and like Pokemon and this kind of stuff. And I really wouldn't be much longer after that until I think I bumped into a stream of Andy's and learned what rando was. And that was the beginning of playing this, I guess.
So do you know about like what time frame that was? I mean, I've kind of, you know, known for you to be around at least in the community for rough upwards of like a year to two at this stage. So was this like in the 2018 era, you know, when Andy was kind of getting real big, or was this, you know, sometime after all this?
Yeah. So I went back and checked cause I knew this would come up, and, I, being data driven, I had a spreadsheet where I kept, you know, races and stuff that I'd done. And I even have some of my oldest seeds in my Google Drive. And the first seed I ever downloaded was in January 2017.
Holy cow.
Is a lot, it was a lot earlier than I ever could have imagined that this was. And then I obviously did like a handful and took a long break for another year, played a bit more the next year in January. And then I think I got back into it a lot more regularly around end of 2019, August time. 2019, I was doing the dailies that were coming out on the Discord server and this kind of stuff.
Like the daily challenges or whatever they were? Okay.
And since then, I've just done more and more, I guess. Since then, it's built up. It's been a staple in my in my life since August 2019. And I think at this point, I've touched most branches and most, you know, areas of Rando as it is.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of off topic a little bit, but with Rando, like, are there any other randomizers that you play currently or have checked out and enjoy? Or is it mainly just A Link to the Past Rando? Because, you know, you said you had SNES and Zelda growing up. Is that kind of the affinity towards that?
Yeah, it is just A Link to the Past, actually. There isn't any other kind of randomizer. I know, I'm perfectly aware of the existence of a lot. I know a lot of people play like the Pokemon
right,
stuff.
Right.
Wasn't something I watched a lot of Pokemon when I was younger, but never got into the games very heavily. But no, it is basically just been ALTTPR. Okay. I picked up Super Metroid once or twice to play through the vanilla game. And to a lot of people's dismay, have not finished it.
Oh no. Oh no. You're going to have to finish that one day.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh man. So where do you find yourself kind of, you know, pre-bot overlord in Tark? Where do you find yourself kind of in the Rando community? Like, do you join tournaments? I don't really remember seeing your name in any tournaments, but you know, I feel like, you know, I don't know everybody. So,
sure. My very first race on Racetime, because Racetime was where I started joining actual races other than ladder. My very first race on Racetime is in the 2021 HMG tournament.
Wow.
Yeah. Before that, it was a bit of ladder and the dailies and stuff. But I know that I joined Cross Keys, the one just passed, and the one prior, if I'm not mistaken. You have to check my challenge account. Start.gg.
I think those were on Start.gg.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it. You know, so the glitches. How did you teach yourself those? I say teach yourself, I'm kind of putting that in your mouth, but how did you learn how to do the glitches? Because I'll be honest, like back when it sounds like you started playing way like even before me. And when I was trying to play, the only like tutorials out there were like the Super Scudge videos. And I don't know if I just didn't resonate with him. He was really smart with all of his stuff now that I look back on it, but like, as a complete newbie, I had no idea like what he was talking about. And he's like, you just get here and clip in. And I'm like, bro, how do I clip in? Like, give me the basics. So how did you, were you self-taught or did you have somebody or like a video like helping you out?
No, I was self-taught for the most part. I remember my very first glitch seed, if I'm not mistaken, was one of the dailies that happened to roll overworld glitches. And, wow. I don't think I noticed it at the time and started playing and very quickly realized that I was very stuck and couldn't work out why. Eventually saw what it was. And it comes back to Andy, actually. I think I'd seen him, you know, do a few clips here and there. Nothing crazy, but at least clipping in to go, you know...
GT or something?
Yeah.
One of the easier ones.
Or you know, getting down to desert or this kind of stuff. So I at least had it in my mind what that that it existed. That's what it looked like. I think I looked for other people who had done the same daily to go and watch like VODs if they had them. I remember watching the Super Scourge videos, but again, I'm in the same boat as you. I did not. I know now that there's a lot of very good information in there.
Yeah.
But at the time, I don't know what it was. I didn't get on with them very well. I've gone back to them since and learned a lot, but,
yeah, I feel like that's, glitched knowledge, like 401, if that's even a thing. And I, at the time I needed like 101 or like the, remediary. I think that's the word courses where it's like, you got to learn a little extra before you can actually get into the university for this.
Yeah. So I remember learning a bit more, and then not long after that, I think, is when the HMG tournament was announced. And so I put more effort into learning about it. And Malmo has incredible resources. Yes. She has this Google Doc with all of the overworld glitches. She has docs explaining the logic behind HMG and how that works. And I remember one of my HMG practice seeds, not long after Heropot was discovered. And everybody used Heropot at that point. And so I didn't fully understand, you know, taking the big key from Maya to open the big key door in Hera, because you always had the hookshot. Well, it just so happened in this seed, the hookshot was upstairs in Hera. And so I was stuck. I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And, you know, some of the glitch players pointed me to where what was going wrong and what I actually had to do. And these guys from Malmo were super helpful in learning all of this. But despite that, I absolutely bailed out of the HMG 2021 tournament. I got put up against Czechs Human for my first two races, because it was basically bottom seed versus top seed. And I got my ass handed to me.
So. Yeah, and glitched when Czechs is involved, it's that seems to be a common trend. He's one of the mainstays, I think, who have been like super good, not just at the game, but also at the glitches and like the knowledge with it. So, you know. Good fight. So, when I first met you, it was kind of interacting like, hey, what is this Doors thing that Andy's trying to load up this tracker? So Obviously Doors branch had been around for a while. Tell me what made you want to make this Doors tracker that, you know, does things that, you know, that aren't race legal, I guess is probably the best way to put it.
Yes.
This is an investigation, by the way. No, I'm kidding.
Shit. The president's after me, guys. So I was, it comes a bit into, you know, being interested technically about auto tracking and how it works and this kind of stuff.
Right.
Doors was always really interesting to me, but I am the worst with directions, both in real life and in games. I can follow a map great, better in a game than I can in real life for some reason. But if I have to remember the direction I've come, it's very often that we'll go into a shop, me and my wife, and then we'll come out and I'll turn to go the way we came from rather than the way we were going, and I get a very strange look. So Doors was always really, really interesting, and same as Entrance. Like, I love Entrance and cross keys. I use Entrando for that, and that tracker works really, really well with how my brain works. But there was nothing really for Doors. I tried the Dunker tracker part of door tracking, but I didn't really get on with it. And I don't know, in my head, I was like, there's a way for this to work. And in my head, I can see how it would exist. And so I'm just going to give it a go and see if I can pull something together. The irony is actually this all started, so the door tracker was actually, I didn't really think about the way that this would work until I'd already started working on a customizer, a GUI-based customizer for the Doors branch. So,
Okay.
That's actually where it came from, and where I had the idea to bring that over, and where I was like, okay, now I can see how this would work for this, because Doors got the customizer feature. Aranon added that, and that meant that you could, you know, you could plando entrances, and you could plando all the kind of stuff you couldn't do with the regular customizer on the main site. But it was god awful to try and work out how you were supposed to write these entrances and what linked to what, and, you know, copy pasting entrance names to get them all working. And so I was like, well, that is not too hard. Yeah, Dorando is written in Python. I have a reasonable amount of experience with Python. And so I was like, okay, it shouldn't be too hard to add a map, add the underworld map, add the dungeon, like add the chests, and let you click on it to choose what you want there. And so that's where it started, with items and entrances. And then I added Doors support. And the big thing I wanted to always have working with the customizer, and I have need to go back to this project because it's not finished, is being able to, you know, load a spoiler from the DR branch and have it load in and show you where everything is, items, entrances, and ideally the dungeon layout. But it turns out that at the time, and I think it's still the same now, is the super tiles are not listed as to what dungeon they exist in. It just tells you this is the entrance to, you know, desert is Laser Bridge, and Laser Bridge North is connected to Desert Main South, and Desert Main North is connected to yada yada, and it just continues on. It doesn't tell you that these are part of desert. It just tells you what's connected to what. So I had to write the code to basically parse this out and build the map dynamically. And then I had this realization that actually this would work perfectly fine as a tracker for the exact same reason. And to begin with, it was fully manual. So I was actually using my customizer branch, my customizer like GUI based thing as a door tracker before I added any auto tracking functionality, because it was basically the same, right? You were able to put down the super tiles and link the doors together because that's how you wanted to plan it out down the dungeon. And then, well, that's exactly what you're doing when you play the game as well. And then the auto tracking stuff was, I was always, you know, I used auto tracking all the time. I used to play on emulator and now I have a Super NT. An FX pack, so I can auto track there. And technology is phenomenal, and the people that make it work have done great jobs. And I just kind of wanted to learn a bit more about it. It just so happened that SNI uses gRPC, which is a protocol I was used to from work, from doing some software dev at work. And I was like, well, it shouldn't be too hard to get the information I want. Turns out it was harder than I thought, because
always is.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it doesn't matter what you think. The transitions between tiles happens in like 20 different ways in this game. Mm-hmm. And you have to catch so many edge cases, but eventually I got it working. I could track Link's position, which you can see on the auto tracker as well. I have it update 10 times a second, so you can follow along live, which is pretty cool. Yeah, once it was that, once I had the player position, it was relatively easy to work out what super tile you're in, and then working out exactly what door you've gone through and have gone through and come out of was a bit more to get working. But that's kind of where it came from. First the customizer, okay, and then just being like, well, I want to be able to play doors a bit more. And this is the way for it, especially because, you know, like you said, Mike, Eri, Telethar, these guys all did multis playing doors, Andy a lot as well. Right. And it felt hard to join in when I knew that I was going to be stuck wandering around a dungeon as if I was blind without a good way to track them, especially then you're actually talking to people, right? So then you're not even fully focused on trying to keep everything in your brain because you're making jokes and you're talking shit.
Exactly. So. Yeah. Like, that's what's been so useful for me with that tracker. And this, I probably need to update it, but like, especially I guess to do the manual part for another tournament, but that's a side. there's, you know, it's nice to be able to have the doors experience and also like somewhat autopilot while you're just kind of relaxing and just like hanging out casually gaming, because otherwise it's like, all right, I'm in the overworld, I'm playing cross keys, we'll say, because that's what, you know, the overworld is like, you're checking entrances, but it's like, well, I found a dungeon, time to hyper focus to try and remember this, and I never remember this, and you know, and then I miss something in the conversation, someone saying my name, and I'm like, what? You know, so
no, yeah, I fully get it.
But yeah, it's been a pretty good valuable asset as far as I'm concerned. So I'm glad you made it.
I'm very glad. With a lot of the response I got was people kind of in a similar boat to me, that they, you know, they wanted to play doors but didn't have the time or didn't have a good way to take notes, and they just wanted to do it casually, and this enabled them to do it. And then there was the Doors Beginner Tournament, which was you were allowed to use it in there as well, which I think got a lot more people familiar with it. Luckily,
right.
I was dreading, right? Like, so I mentioned before, I'm not formally trained in programming or anything. It's all self-taught. And there's always that bit in the back of my mind that, like, I hope I didn't screw up somewhere and some halfway through someone's race, the map is just going to, you know, jumble up or it's going to crash or something like this. And I don't think there was one instance of it happening, luckily, but it was always the whole tournament, I was dreading getting that message.
Yeah, like the thing with racing though is like, you may feel that way, but when you use a tracker, especially with auto tracking and with logic built in, I don't know if it has logic built in, but like, you know, like say Dunka tracker with the logic built in showing you green squares, there's always the chance that the coding could be slightly off. So that's kind of like runner responsibility to make sure you're not just like going to the green squares, so to speak. So like the times that the tracker would work for people, hopefully you learn something just in case it goes down.
Yeah.
But at least that's kind of how I view it.
But. No, totally. Yeah. And then from the door tracker, I there's a few other things I have built for Rando as well. The biggest one would be the glitch maps that Mamo and I worked together on. So we took the Word documents, the Google Docs that she had, you know, these images that with numbers on them. Me, Mike, and 2C used to call it the glitch menu. You know, your Chinese menu. You're reading out the numbers, and we used to do the same on voice. We're looking at the looking at the map and reading out. Oh, you want to do 42, or you want to do 3, or whatever. And so
I'll
moving
have to get
that
from you, so I can like actually use it and like help share it, I guess.
Yeah, I'm happy to give a link, and I can always throw it in the Gomo podcast Discord as well, if for people that haven't seen it. But it's just an interactive version of that, basically. So it's a, you know, you can zoom in, zoom out of the maps. You can see the glitches that are known, the clipping spots in the overworld, mm-hmm. and then more into the no logic stuff and the HMG stuff in the underworld as well. Malmo put in an incredible amount of effort to curate all of the glitches and write all of the text for them. And the map wouldn't exist without her.
That's pretty awesome. Like she does so much for the glitch community. Like it's absolutely insane to think about, because it's like, anytime I hear something glitch, it's like, well, I mean, yeah, I assume Malmo's involved because, you know, she's very active in the glitch community, but then it's like, well, there was this resource, Malmo helped do it. And it's like, I hear that so often, and I just think it's so awesome.
Oh, 100%. I cannot imagine that the glitch community would be what it was if it wasn't for her. So all the props to her. Beyond that, I started hosting a few other things. I host a slightly modified version of Dunker Tracker on my website as well, that has mm-hmm. changes that Mike made to make the map easier to read for himself and other people liked. So it used to be he would share the zip file with the tracker files in it, which worked well. I had the same version. And then mm-hmm. I started hosting that. Now you can customize the colors of spot of the locations and stuff in it. I put some presets up there for like the glitch tournaments or AVNR or the doors branch. Right.
And is that the one with like the green keys, I guess, like green number keys when you max out like in cross keys or something?
Yeah, exactly. That's Telethar's contribution, was the green keys. Bringing these changes, so the visual changes from Mike, the green keys from Telethar, I added in the ability for doing more color changes and the extra presets and stuff. And the other thing was bringing in the glitch logic. So Other Tom, if I'm not mistaken, made a version of Dunker Tracker a long time ago that hadn't been updated. And so I updated that as well to bring that all kind of into one version there.
Okay. So here's my question, and this is very selfishly driven, but when do you start working on modifying Intrando and we get a co-op version?
So Telethar and I have been discussing this because I use Intrando. I love Intrando. I found it via Andy, as is the rest of my Rando stuff, apparently. And at the time, once I got the auto tracking working in my doors tracker and I finally like really understood how everything worked, I was like, well, it shouldn't be hard to add this to Intrando. And Telethar already had a slightly modified version to mm-hmm. add extra icons. And so I forked off of that and started to add auto tracking to that. And he helped a lot with that as well. And co-op was the next thing on our list of things that would be interesting. We've had a couple of discussions of how it might look and the complications over certain parts of it, but there's unfortunately no code written, but it's definitely been something that's come up a couple of times.
It's on the whiteboard and it's kind of looked at in the voice call meetings, we'll say, but
yeah.
Nothing's been acted upon because it's useful for Fierce 216 co-op tourney right now, and the league should, you know, you hit playoffs, I guess, right now.
Yeah, and I'm not in either of those, so I have maybe less incentive to put extra time into it, but no, exactly. So
that makes sense. I mean, and that's kind of what a lot of this is about, I think, is the what you're interested in. And it seems like you've really not just taken things you found interest in, but also given back quite a bit, you know, not just with your programming, but like, you know, collaborations and other things.
No, I love that. It's exactly what my job is as well. I service, you know, 10 or 11 labs in the department. I helping people is what I love. And same with my job, same with A Link to the Past as well. Making the doors more accessible, you know, making Mike's changes to the Dunker Tracker more accessible, making the glitch stuff more accessible, helping out on the TARC Discord where I can. I never was interested in being an admin or a mod, despite having my own opinions on, well, particularly auto tracking. But just doing stuff that means I can help out and make things, yeah, just more enjoyable or easier for people is something I really love doing. And it goes hand in hand, especially here with like tinkering with stuff, and the self-taught programming just means I can jump in and mess around and see if something works. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And
yeah,
you know, that's that.
So tell me a little bit about TARC. How did you get involved with TARC? You know, after I kind of, the admins were voted in and I said, all right, deuces, y'all have fun. I don't really understand what happened from like from that point on, as far as like the admin side. I don't really need to know, but were you approached or did you say, hey, I can help out in these like bot categories? And I guess beyond that, like what do you really, what do you do over there, I guess, for all the bot stuff, for lack of better phrasing?
Yeah. So, I was reached out to, not long after the current admins, took their roles. I think, this would have been mid to late August, last year. So, that was about when they reached out. I think Synac was getting the role regardless. That makes a lot of sense given the incredible amount of work that he does. But Cody and I were reached out to for that, and basically asked to help with anything bot related with the server, help with some of the more technical side of setting up channels or integrations or this kind of stuff. Which it was super nice to be offered that. It was, you know, it was very, I can't think of the right word, but just to know that someone was there, noticed that was the kind of stuff I might be interested in.
It's like, it's always nice to feel like, you know, someone respects me enough to say, would you mind taking on this responsibility? Like for something that they and yourself would probably find important. And, you know, like when I got asked to be on council, or I guess like, asked to apply, I didn't think I was really council worthy. And then, you know, one of the, you know, people who was like a mainstay in the community back then was just like, you should apply. And I'm like, oh, well, okay. You know, that you convinced me. It didn't take much, but it's like, okay, there was one person with a vote of confidence. So it makes you feel good, I think, when you feel like someone on the internet that just has the same game hobby as you really, you know, gives you that vote of confidence, so to speak.
No, totally. And so for the most part, in terms of helping out, I mean, SahaBot does 99% of all the automation that we need in the community. And again, cannot praise Synac enough for getting that for the work that's been done there. In some cases, it's been, you know, I've dug through SahaBot's code a few times, so I understand it maybe a bit more than some other people might. And so it's been answering questions, helping set up the channels for, you know, the mod chat and the admin chat, or just more technical stuff. In some ways, luckily, it's not been too much because the things seem to have settled into a reasonably good status quo. People are happy with how things are working, and there's not too much to, you know, there's no reason to make a lot of changes at the moment. So for now, it's a bit more of just, you know, I'm just there. I get a nice color, I get a nice name, and I help out with a few technical things where I can.
Yeah, when it's kind of like, I guess we have an idea and we don't want to bother Synac yet again. Do you think this is possible?
Type deal? We have a channel that the three of us and the admins are in, and you know, they pop in with a question every now and again, and whoever's there pops up and answers. That's exactly it.
It's always nice to have, back when I was on council too, it's nice to have someone around to just talk to that you feel maybe is smarter than you. Like when we used to vote on like most of the things about like what emulators are allowed, we would just be like, I have no idea how these emulators work. So we would heavily lean on the devs, and Synac being part of that, just to kind of explain, okay, what are the differences? What did they change revision from old revision to this one to make it race legal? You know, so, but it all just like flies like completely over my head every time.
some of the work that the devs done is absolutely incredible. Like, I see Can and the other devs talking sometimes, and then they'll, you know, a bunch of assembly code will get posted and my eyes will glaze over, and I've dug into the PHP for the website, and I've dug into the DR code for the Python code for Dorando. I added the HMG logic to Dorando most recently. But assembly is, other than a very minor dip my toes in very recently, not something I am familiar with or could read, other than change a few things and try to get something working.
Yeah, hope it compiles again.
Yeah, exactly. Recently I was making a few small tweaks to, there was three things I did actually. So I host a patcher sim as Synax, but it allows you to update the names of someone in a multi game. Which is cool for DR because it means you can pre-generate a seed, hand it out, and then people can update their names, or you can give your friends stupid names and laugh at them during the stream. and then I branched off of that after the Fastrom changes, actually, because some people obviously were not as big of a fan. And I know that Eri, for example, is a good friend and someone that I play with regularly, finds that particularly difficult. And so I have a what we call secret patcher, and it has a few extra options that are not exactly race legal. And so for Eri, there's an option to reintroduce the lag frames when you open a chest. So it will wait 4 frames before you get the item. So that's reintroduced. There is a toggle to disable fast run, but it is only going to work as long as the code is there for it to work. That's, you know, nothing the devs are ever going to support. And I fully agree with that and understand that, but that's right. Patching in sudo boots. And then most recently, we've been doing a few multis with like True Pot Hunt or Pots and Bones from the Avian Art, where there's 400 Triforce pieces, you need 216. So I took that item lag addition I did, and I did the opposite, and I removed the fanfare when you pick up items. And so there's a couple of VODs there from Mike, myself, and a few others playing with this. And it's, I would recommend people just going and find one of the VODs, because it's hilarious to just open a chest and instantly be walking away. And multiple of us in there, it works with every item pickup, right? So including from NPC. So multiple times during that game, we would go to Hype Cave and you'd pick up, you'd drop the bomb, throw it over, walk around to the back, talk to the NPC, and then instantly get blown up by your own bomb because there's no fanfare.
Fantastic. Does it make a noise? Like, does it play the normal fanfare like sound when you pick up an item, or?
No, it doesn't. We also realize that there is a bug that I have no idea how to fix, and that is you don't get money from chests anymore. If there's money in that chest, you hold it up for 4 frames and then it's gone. You don't get it.
Perfect.
So, living up to my jank moniker, as I have earned in some circles.
Well, I mean, this is how you learn, right? I mean, I'm pretty sure the first iterations of Randomizer were, as you put it, very jank, you know, and it's like, we're making progress as we go. So you don't, if you ain't making a mistake, you're not really trying to learn anything, as far as I'm concerned, whether it be coding or just life in general, I think.
I 100% agree. And that is very much how I have learned programming, and everything I have is trial and error. It's, you know, you have to, some people are really afraid to do something and have it break. And I can understand that mentality, but that's exactly how I learn, is by messing with something. And like I said, them changes for the item collection, I crashed the randomizer God knows how many times.
Like, yeah, I'm just imagining your pot thing though. Like, I'm imagining just like being in Graveyard Ledge and just like hammer dashing and just picking up everything as you go through it.
Yeah, it's Hera, the top of Hera as well in Pot Shuffle. You lift up all the pots and then you can just like, you walk through them, you pause for like four frames each time, but not standing there for that's it, right? You need 213 mm-hmm. pieces or 216 pieces to finish. The 2 seconds of time, there is God knows how much time, almost 10 minutes of time just standing there with Link holding items over his head.
Wow.
That was exactly where we were like, if we want to do more of these, maybe we need a solution.
That's pretty good. I really like the idea of that, especially for
the very first iteration. You didn't even see the item, so I had to make sure there was a little bit of a delay because you had no idea what you were getting.
Look at the auto tracker. What lit up?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, how do I track it? It's like auto tracking back in the day versus manual tracking, and you didn't see the items in the dark. So it's like, well, what do I do?
Yeah. Oh, God. Good times.
That's pretty good. I want to be respectful of your time. I know it's pretty late for you. So let me ask you the last three questions that I like to ask everybody. So sure. I guess, you know, you're not a big tournament player. I know you play a lot, but do you have a most embarrassing moment in Rando, or is it maybe the items not showing up when you coded the pot thing?
No, Again, I've listened to a few episodes of this recently, and there were a few things that came up. So I've got two or three. One okay. that I think some people would think is embarrassing, but I love it, is the muffins dash. That was...
oh my God, yes.
Watching the clip of Maniacal just breaking down on stream over me doing that dash. And I will own it upright. Like, I don't play NMG. I do not. Now I'm a bit more conscious, but especially at the time, sure. I didn't pay attention.
You start to be conscious.
Yeah, I did not pay attention to, you know, what is efficient or not. I liked my boots and I would dash all the time. But particularly now after that, I'm a bit more wary. But the fact that meme exists is great. The other two would be the HMG tournament I mentioned that I joined back in 2021. Mm-hmm. I was in GT and I bombed open the wall to go to random room, and then I slipped and hit the portal instead of walking through the door. And it's one of them things that you don't ever do. And so then I was like, wait, can I get back? And then I'm like taking all of the portals to try and work out, is there a route back? And like, because you don't do that. And you're like, right. Which portals go where? And standing there for like 2 minutes realizing, no, I have just fucked up and I have to go all the way, you know, back there. And it's not a big distance, but that was very early in me playing Rando, and it felt most embarrassing. And I think the last one was me and Mike joined the Spoiler Log tournament last year or the year before. And mm-hmm. I was always piloting. He was always playing, which was fine. I really enjoyed that. And there was an item. It was Rando Room again, if I'm not mistaken. There was a key or something we needed in there. And for some reason, I got it in my head that we needed a GT small. And the GT smalls were just in the worst locations. And one of them was Left Side Swamp. And so we get all the way, I guide Mike to Left Side Swamp. And he's like, why are we going here? I'm like, we need the GT key because we needed this. And I think I even said it was in Rando Room. And he was just trusting me that I knew what I was doing. So he went to Left Side Swamp, got the GT key. We get to DT, get the key he needs, get whatever he needs from Rando Room. And he's still got one key left. It just felt so stupid.
That's usually the way it goes. I mean, you still have to climb GT, right? So yeah. if you're leaving with one and there's no more pot keys, I guess that's actually kind of right, I think. Unless yeah, and it was one upstairs or something.
I think we had one extra was the point.
Okay.
It definitely was not something we needed.
Oh, well, you tried. Again, yeah, exactly. You got to make the mistakes and learn. Because when I'm piloting like Matt and Andy in League, it's kind of like, it's a GT small here. Is it worth the time opening that chest that you're right beside? Because, you know, like we talked about, opening the chest takes time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just get it, because I don't want to count GT stuff in the GT big keys deep in GT. So I don't know. Like, yeah. I should know it as much as I've played this, but I just don't know.
No, 100%. Yeah. Piloting is a whole other beast.
Yeah. It's like the pressure just mounts up so quickly. Well, thanks for sharing those. And I guess second, what is your favorite MSU pack to use?
I almost exclusively use the Endwalker, Final Fantasy 14 Endwalker MSU that Skelly made since it came out. I don't know what it is about it. I love it. I know a lot of people use, you know, MSUs from older games and stuff. Before that, I bounced around a bunch of different ones. some of the old Zelda ones or Link's Awakening, this kind of stuff. But since Skelly came out with that, I think I have exclusively used that. So,
okay, I'll have to check that one out. I know from talking to like Sir Link a lot and a couple other people that, you know, Final Fantasy 14 has a lot of really good music. So yeah. I actually haven't checked that pack out. So I'll, I do like Final Fantasy music, so I'll check it out. And lastly, if you had to lose all of your gaming memories, but you're still allowed to keep one of them, which one do you keep and why?
Yeah, this one's tough.
That's what everyone says.
Yeah, with gaming being such a big part of like my life forever, this is hard. I think though, so not long ago, probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, I got my wife into gaming a bit more, and she plays a very different type of game than I do. But in the summer last year, I took a long holiday from work, and I had a bunch of games I wanted to play through. And right as my holiday started, Baldur's Gate 3 came out, and I wasn't going to buy it, and then I changed my mind. And we spent probably I think 120 hours over the three or four weeks of my holiday, day in, day out, co-op playing Baldur's Gate. And the thing that was the best about it is it's not the type of game she would play. But she got into it and she pressed every button, made every bad decision you could make in the game. Whereas my character was very much like the good neutral character, you know, I'm trying to be good. And she's the one making all the deals and killing people and this kind of stuff. And just this, it's gotta be one of my favorite times of gaming at all. So I think if I'm going to keep one, it's going to be that.
That's pretty awesome. Like, you know, being able to kind of like, you know, not only share your life with, but like also the hobbies, you know, to an extent like that. That's pretty awesome. And I think it's super wholesome too.
It was good. It was a lot of fun. And
Oh yeah. Well, Muffins, thank you so much for coming on, dude. This was actually absolute blast on my end. I hope you had a good time.
I really did. It's been great. It's cool to reminisce over everything and just thinking about all the random crap I've done with Rando over the years as well brings up a lot of good memories.
All right. Anything you want to plug before we close it out?
Just the stuff I've worked on for Rando, the glitch maps, the door tracker, the patching stuff. If people want a fun time, poke me somewhere on Discord and I'll share the secret patcher with you and you can turn off your item pickup animations. Just don't go using it in races.
Yeah, we don't need the Tark admins doing things. Don't make them do anything. Let them just sit there.
Exactly.
So. All right. Well, this has been Muffins on the Spoiler Log. Once again, a huge thanks to Muffins for coming on the show. Really enjoyed our time together. Coming up in 2 weeks, we're going to have Yoinker's wife. Really looking forward to sharing that conversation with you guys. Had a good time talking to her. I hope you guys are looking forward to hearing that episode. But until then, hope to see you guys on GMP next week, and we'll see you guys next time.